could you introduce yourself and tell us, give us your take, Justin, if you could maybe just start by giving us a bit of background about yourself.
Oh, gosh, where do I start, Tony? Right, Justin Walker. Well, I suppose for about the last 30-odd years, I've been suspicious. I was in the Green Party, Ecology Party, but I saw it gradually being hijacked. And I started to wonder about the way the world was governed above our elected representatives.
Okay, hijacked by whom?
Well, this is the intriguing part. Because of my late uncle, my late uncle was Sir Harry Pilkington, later the Lord Pilkington. He went to the very first Bilderberg Group meeting in 1954, and then he became a director of the Bank of England from 1955 to 1972. And I was on the train with him going back to school. I was going back to do my O-levels, and he was going to one of his last meetings at the Bank of England. And he was basically asking me what I wanted to do in life. And I was explaining to what my, you know, going to the army and going into the family business, etc. And he suddenly blurted out, he said, right, I want you to give you two pieces of advice to take through life. Never, ever believe anything you read in the press because we control it. And never, ever believe a politician when they say they can do something. They can't unless we say they can. Now, that was way back in 1972. I vaguely thought to myself, must be something to do with big business and bankers.
Well, I mean, you're saying, using the word we there, I suppose, did he mean the Bank of England?
Well, I never know because I didn't really come back to him. I wish I had. But I was 16, for goodness sake, going back to school. But I remember the conversation because it was just so weird and out of context. He suddenly said it. And he was a lovely man. Don't get me wrong. He was an absolutely superb uncle to have, an uncle by marriage. Very generous, very eccentric. He used to cycle around London in a bowler hat long before it was fashionable to do so. And everyone loved him. I mean, when he died in 1985, there were 12 cars in the funeral cortege. The whole of St. Helens turned out on a very, very cold winter's day. And the Rothschild family and everyone else were part of the mourners. So I mean, it was a pretty incredible day. But that was an opening to me. I mean, that was when I started to realize that there was an echelon of governance above our elected servants in Parliament who pulled the strings. And it's basically from the City of London, if you want to be, you know, if you wanted to get it, you know, use this country as an example, it is obviously big business directing events.
So so you left the Green Party, I take it, at that point when you believed it was being taken over?
Joined the Green Party in 1987, something like that. And we fast-tracked him into becoming one of our chief spokespersons. And I got to know David very well. We have a mutual interest in steam railways and stuff. And we became quite good friends. And when he eventually went off on his path, the Green Party turned totally against him. In fact, I was appalled by the venom, actually, the way they treated him. But I thought, no, I'll read his book, The True Vibrations. And I read it, and I actually felt quite comfortable with it. And David and I have become friends ever since. We've been friends ever since, 30-odd years. I've watched the way his journey, I've watched how it developed. And, of course, with some of his experiences, I cross-reference to some of my own experiences.
And, well, I mean, okay, so David Icke, he's a controversial figure. He recently reviewed this book called Who Made the Moon? And he came out at the end of last year saying that he believed the moon was actually a hollow metal sphere possibly put there by aliens, and he's also, you know, notoriously talked about the royal family as shape-shifting lizards. So I mean, what do you make of these more extreme of his views?
I'm going to shock you now, Tony. I'm going to shock you. When I was doing a project for I was working with Durham University and various other people to set up a rapid response to disasters. We're trying to get the United Nations using surplus military equipment when the Cold War ended. We tried to persuade the UN to set up a real-life international rescue, a real-life Thunderbirds, whereby you would have airborne rescue teams up to 1,000 strong flying into a country within 24 hours of a major disaster, usually an earthquake, cyclone, or something like that, or it could be a human-made disaster like Bhopal. and you come in with all the appropriate aid needed to absolutely magnify your efforts to save people. It was all common sense, nothing complicated. It wouldn't have cost a great deal of money. We were optimistic that, that things would happen. Anyway, I went to speak at a conference in Austria called CAMDON, a campaign for a more democratic United Nations, to give them an address on how to improve rapid response to disasters. And it was just after the Soviet Union had fallen and the Russian Federation took place. And I met, I suppose the best equivalent, he was Sir Humphrey Appleby of the Russian Federation. He was a top civil servant who was there, took me to one side, said, come and have lunch with me. Now, this was all taking place at the Austrian United Nations building, which is the International Atomic Energy Agency. He said, come and have lunch. And so we went down, and in the canteen area, he suddenly recognized two professors. And he said, come over, please. And they immediately recognized him and introduced me. Anyway, we sat down and started talking about various things. And then with a smirk on their faces, and they both spoke perfect English with American accents, which amused me, they suddenly said, what do you think of the moon? And as I said, this is going back to about 1990. And I said, well, what do you mean? What do you think of the moon? He said, do you believe the moon is real? And anyway, it transpired that these two Russian professors from the Moscow Academy both believed that the moon was some sort of alien device, and that it was not what it seems. It rings like a bell, it's hollow, and that the real science, NASA, was not prepared to release stuff, but the Russian Academy were open-minded.
Don't you think they may have been having a laugh with you?
No, I don't think so at all. I think they were deadly serious, because if you actually look up the Russian Academy and what they say, there's a hell of a lot that they are prepared to say, which is different to what NASA's saying. So I keep an open mind on all these things. You know, strange things happen, and who knows what the moon really is. I'm not a scientist, but I do know a lot of scientists question the very, you know, how it came about. I mean, there were some ancient indigenous peoples, I think Credo Matwa, the Zulu shaman, used to talk about it. They used to talk about the prehistory of the history of the planet before the moon existed. I don't know. I keep my options open on this, but these were serious scientists, and they were well outside the accepted, they were thinking outside the box, well and truly.
Anyway, I mean, I first met you, Justin, when you were chair of the UK 9/11 Truth Movement. This is back in the noughties, not long after 9/11 itself. Yeah. Where several of us who were very concerned about the mass media, misinterpreting the September the 11th attacks really as an excuse for this ridiculous war on terror, you know, the war with no end, never intended to end. At that point, we were looking really at the way the mass media and the arms companies were bamboozling people. But anyway, I wondered really after that what your take is on this whole COVID-19 business, because this seems to me to be along the similar lines, only the target with 9/11 was these countries that the United States and Britain and others wanted to institute regime changes in. You know, we're talking obviously about places like Iraq, possibly Afghanistan, Libya. But the difference with the COVID is that it's directed more against the domestic populations around the world rather than, you know, some sort of other country.
Well, I would just correct you slightly. I think when it talked about regime changes after 9/11, it was for those countries which were not following a central banking practice as decreed by the Bank for International Settlements, a la the private banking families, the dynasties. So I would argue that it was very convenient that the regime changes. I mean, one of the first things that happened to poor old Gaddafi, as soon as they took over, the first thing they did was set up a central bank that the Bank for International Settlements could agree to. So shall we just say, I believe it was to do with financial arrangements of war and terror. It clicked a lot of boxes, but one of them was to make sure that all nations have a central banking system that effectively creates money out of thin air as debt, and basically can go along with what the Bank for International Settlements and the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, the Rockefellers, and all the other big big banking dynasties are basically promoting around the world to incur huge debts for the world. But anyway, getting back to what you were saying, yes, COVID. Well, I'm going for the financial side. We know that we've had the fake science, the bad science of man-made global warming pumped into the schoolrooms and everywhere you look. Big business now and the banking, the Bank for International Settlements, the Bank of England, all these big financial institutions are all talking about climate change and getting CO2 and, you know, any companies now that don't go along with man-made global warming will find themselves penalized and put out of business. I mean, you know, everywhere you look now, it is the big green deal, the new green deal. And so what we now have is the new green deal coupled with this thing called the Great Reset, which a guy called Schwartz, what's his first name? I can't think of his first name. But anyway, the guy who created the World Economic Forum at Davos, he came up with a thing called the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And that is taking humanity towards transhumanism and centralized living cells, which run by 5G. I mean, the whole thing is a nightmare. It is effectively fascism. It is basically the world being run by technology, and you will do as you're told. You'll be microchipped, you'll be basically attached in weird ways to the internet of all things. And anyway, it's just a nightmare scenario that's building, but they are going for this great reset. And to do that, they had to trash the global economy. They had to cause such a jolt in the economy that they could justify triggering this great reset. So this sudden pandemic has come along, which is now being used to reset the economy. And, well, as far as I'm concerned, it is 9/11. It's another form of 9/11 because everyone's, well, not everyone, far from it, but a large number of people still believe the official accounts of what the governments are saying, that we're being blitzed by this dreadful pandemic that's killing people left, right and centre.
Well, what facts would you point to contradict what the government's saying then?
Oh, absolutely. Let's start number one. This is the best one for me. The winter of 2017-2018 in this country. And you can go to the Office of National Statistics to get the facts. During the winter of 2017-2018, excess deaths, this country experienced 50,100. 50,100 excess deaths. Now, I believe the current death toll for the whole of coronavirus in this country is roughly around about 43,000. They had to revise it downwards, it is well below the 50,000 we lost during the winter of 2017-2018. So that's the first thing which most people have no idea about, and they can go and check it on the Office of National Statistics. It's all there. But the second thing is that this whole pandemic, this whole thing, for most people, it's just normal flu-like symptoms. Yes, some people have experienced terrible things. Then they've been put on these ventilators, which apparently were the kiss of death, because I'm not a scientist and I'm not a doctor, but I'm told reliably by other doctors that the last thing you do is put people on ventilators, and people will be killed on these blessed ventilators. And then you've had the whole of the NHS quiet. So many people have died now as a result of not getting proper treatment by the NHS, because effectively all staff were only worried about the COVID and what have you. Had these giant hospitals built, completely empty, nobody in them hardly. To me, there are so many whistleblowers now, nurses, doctors and others coming forward. And I was privileged to talk to one of them the other night, Dr. Adil, who's been suspended because he's spoken out. We've got to start to listen to these doctors. But I'm not an expert, Tony, so I'm going to be the first one to admit that I do not fully understand this banking.
Hang on, though, because when it comes along to the end of September this month, this year, 2020, The government are going to vote to renew this Coronavirus Act, and there is some pressure on them to say, well, actually, we believe this is a bit like the Emperor's New Clothes, that actually the number of people dying is bumping along the zero line, and so really the pandemic is over. What do you think you're doing renewing it?
Well, exactly. I mean, but what I'm getting myself involved in, and which I hope to be able to talk about, is the fact that the government could bail out all the businesses that are suffering as a result of these restrictions.
Well, please do, Justin, because I think that's another aspect of this which has been lost, is that we've got the Jeff Bezos and the Zuckerbergs have basically doubled their personal wealth out of this pandemic, whereas many, many small businesses are going to the wall, and the government really doesn't seem to care.
No, they don't. And this is all part of the Great Reset. The Great Reset does not like small businesses, medium-sized businesses. It only likes giant transnational corporations. And so the first thing we've got to realize is that this whole COVID thing is effectively the enemy of small business and medium-sized businesses. And the business community have got to come together very quickly to stand up to the nonsense. And it's just insane what's happening. And, of course, all this social distancing, wearing masks and all this stuff, absolute. I don't want to use a swear word, but there's one very good one that begins with B, and it's to do with what you put oars in, rollocks. It is absolutely appalling what is going on, and it doesn't. It's bad science. Like with man-made global warming, the whole bloody thing is mad. It's just bad science. I've used the words of a late great David Bellamy, who I was privileged to know as a friend, and I remember being in his kitchen the day he was, well, not quite the day. It was about a week after he was sacked by the BBC. And he just turned to me and he said, Justin, this is all bad science. And this is what we're seeing with this COVID. It is all bad science. And we've got to get these so-called experts advising the government to basically be challenged in an open, you know, open courtroom, if you like, or whatever, on a level playing field where we can actually look at this science and say, right, what is going on? Because a lot of good scientists are absolutely gobsmacked by what's happening, and they don't have any chance of the BBC, as with climate change, they will not have any debate. Anything that contradicts the official narrative, they will not allow anyone to talk. Everywhere you look, we're being clammed up. All the mainstream papers and everyone, they're all following the narrative, and they will not allow. Look at Piers Corbyn, brave chap. I just wish his brother, Jeremy, had been any of as good as Piers. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn had huge opportunities to upset the deep state, never took up on them. We may talk about that later. But Piers Corbyn, he's prepared to use science and everything else to basically contradict the narrative that's coming from the government and the WHO. And he's getting no support at all from the mainstream media. They will only kowtow to the official narrative.
So we've just had more restrictions coming in. It does look as if the government itself is trying to justify the Coronavirus Act by actually creating lockdowns that are unnecessary in order to create this idea that, keep the fear going. So, I mean, I wonder where you think this is all heading. I think if you can just sum up, because it's all very well when you have a psychological operation going on, which is the 9/11 attacks, you know, thousands of people killed in New York, the object being to subdue foreign countries. But, you know, if we're subduing the domestic population, that really means potentially that we could end up like China. You know, we're already seeing Julian Assange being prosecuted in what looks like a kangaroo court, very much like a sort of Chinese style of, you know, we're not really interested in hearing what the defense has got to say. He hasn't committed any crimes in Britain, but yet he's still been in the high security prison, etc. So we seem to be moving in almost like a China-like direction. I wonder if you think that's overstretching the point, Justin.
No, we're totally moving towards China, because that's what Agenda 21 is, or Agenda 2030, UN Agenda 2030, smart cities and so forth. What we see in China with their new cities and the way they live in a completely centralized society with 5G and everything else, the Internet of Things, where people can be identified by the state just by walking on the streets or anything like that. That is the Orwellian future that is lined up for all of us. And that is the way the deep state, the powers that be, want to take us if we don't get our act together. I'm part of a movement now. We set up a new Chartist movement. We've got the thing called the Hardwick Alliance for Real Ecology. And we're working with other groups to bring people together on four basic areas where if we embrace these areas and come together as one on them, we will defeat the deep state. The first of those is the common law, the fact that people are in charge of the courts, that you can have trial by jury. Obviously, all trials must be done by trial by jury, and that bad legislation passed by parliament can be annulled by annulment by jury, which puts the people firmly in charge and the people have the last say. The second thing is the Bradbury Pound, as I call it. This is sovereign national credit, where we completely divorce ourselves from the private banking and financial sector run by the central bankers and the Bank for International Settlement, who just create money completely out of thin air as debt and then plunge nations, regions and families into unsustainable debt, whereby they control them. And we've got to just divorce ourselves from this criminal entity and put ourselves in charge of creating, through our treasuries, through a nation's treasury, debt-free, interest-free money that's based on the wealth and labor potential, that's your creativity, of the country. And this can be decentralized, and it means that, you know, that cities and towns and regions can create money based on that and on the wealth of that country. It will not lead to inflation. It's not just printing money based on nothing. You're printing money based on something tangible, and that's your credit. And that was done in 1914. It saved the economy. It worked brilliantly then, and it could work brilliantly now. And that's why the Treasury Select Committee and all the other politicians don't want to go near it, because they know it is a perfect solution to our financial problems. So that's the second part. The third part is exposing the suppressed science that we know that big business and the elite are holding back from people. Tesla, that Nikola Tesla, the great inventor, we know that free energy is something that exists. In fact, some people even claim that free energy was used as part of 9/11, but that's for Dr. Judy Wood. That's another story altogether. But the point is, we know that Tesla's inventions are real. I know of somebody who's personally inventing the stuff, and he's doing a machine at the moment. Again, I'm a bit out of my depth science, but there's no doubt about it. A lot of scientists all around the world believe it is possible. And shall we just say that a lot of scientists have been murdered who were investigating free energy. So that's the first thing we'd like to expose, what is going on in that front, and also suppress cancer cures and other medical cures using safe energy devices like the Royal Raymond Rife, the Rife machines, and others. I personally witnessed the Rife machine stop somebody dying who has literally only got days to live, and it completely reversed the cancers and the things. So I personally,
yeah, certainly the big pharmaceutical industry seems to have a kind of stranglehold on the whole medical industry. But anyway, look, Justin,
can I give you the fourth one, which is also important, and that's ecology, because everything we do has to be human scale and working with the environment, real green as opposed to the fake green that's coming out of Extinction Rebellion and the others. This is real green, real ecology, whereby we work with the planet on a human scale.
How do people follow your work, Justin?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I tend to just keep scribbling away. We've got the New Chartist Movement website, www.newchartist.org.uk. We're setting up a website as we speak. In fact, tomorrow night I've got a meeting about that. The Hardwick Alliance for Real Ecology, HARE, which is we always joke that we're a bit like the Bilderberg group. The only difference is that we are completely transparent. Anyone can join, and we are completely open. But we're trying to bring people together. The most important thing we can do at the moment with what's happening is to bring all the different groups together, not as one big new group as a hierarchy, but as literally lots of little groups all working together. There's a very good cartoon I remember of a large fish chasing a group of small fish, And then the next cartoon, you see a huge fish made up lots of small fish chasing the big fish. In other words, we need lots of small groups. We all agree on the basic direction that we want to go, those 4 points I mentioned before, and we work together as a guerrilla army, if you like, so that we're not centralized, we have no hierarchy, we are a completely linear movement working in harmony together, and that way the deep state and all its control mechanisms haven't got the resources to keep an eye on us. They cannot infiltrate because there are just so many of us. And this is now starting to happen. And, of course, what is going to be interesting on, September the 26th in London, there's going to be another big demonstration. We got 35,000 people in Trafalgar Square last time, but with the new government restrictions, what are the police going to do? How can you arrest 35,000 people? They can't.
Well, that's certainly interesting. Anyway, Justin Walker, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, right, it's over. Well, thank you, Tony.